It is definitely difficult to speak after a Hillel, but being that I'm a Mekubal, we should be able to pull it off. I'd like to share with you a very important concept, a very important idea, those of you who are going to go into Chinuch, Kiruv, Kiruv Rechokim, Kiruv Krovim, very important idea it can be used, it should be remembered, it should be a source of chizuk for all of us. Some of you have heard, there's a story is told. It's actually, it's not a story that is told, it's a story that happened, incident happened. A man in America, late on a Friday afternoon, went in to buy a new car. He bought a brand new car on credit, used his credit card, late Friday afternoon, for $50,000. Gets in this beautiful new car, drives the car, goes straight from the new car shop. He drives over to a used car dealership. He goes in, he tells the guy, I'd like to sell you this car for $20,000. He says, whose car is it? He says, it's mine, I just bought it on credit. He says, whole thing sounds very fishy, how do I know it's yours? He says, no, I'm telling you, it's my car, here's my credit card, see? He says, well, how do you know? I don't like what it sounds like. Why would you want to sell a car at $30,000 less than it's worth the day you bought it? So the guy says, listen, what do you care? You'll make a $30,000 profit. What do you care? He says, I don't know. Let me think about it. So the used car dealer gets up. He walks out of the office, takes out his cell phone. He calls the police, says to the policeman, you know what? I got a situation here. You better come down here quick. The cop comes down, walks in, goes over to the guy, hears the story. He says, why do you want to sell a car for $30,000 less? You just bought it. The guy says to the cop, none of your business. Policemen generally don't like when people talk to them that way. Says to the man, well, I'm going to make it my business. Let me have your credit card. Takes the credit card, calls the company, see if he's got a credit line. And it's late Friday. Company's already closed. Says to the guy, I'm sorry. Have to put you in prison over the weekend. Monday morning, we'll see if everything's kosher. Puts him in jail. Monday morning, takes the credit card, calls down to the office. And sure enough, glatt kosher, not a problem. He's got a credit line. Everything is as good. Couldn't be better. Comes over to the guy, opens up the prison cell. He says, I'm sorry, it's a terrible mistake. It's my error. You're free to go. Guy says, okay, gives him a big smile, leaves the prison cell, goes straight to an attorney's office, sues the police for false arrest, and he gets a settlement of $3.5 million. He planned the entire thing start to finish to do something that looks suspicious on a Friday afternoon, get the maximum amount of time under false arrest so he could sue the police, get the sympathy of the judge, and he gets a $3.5 million settlement. Somebody were to ask you, how much is that car worth? Is that car worth $50,000? Is that car worth $20,000? That car is worth $3.5 million. Doesn't look like it. When you look at the car, it doesn't look it. $3.5 million. It's a true story. True story. There are a lot of things we do in life where we ourselves don't realize the value of what we're doing. On the surface, it looks like it has a certain value, but if you know more about it, you understand that there's a tremendous value, perhaps it's visible, perhaps it's hidden, tremendous value to what we're doing. Imagine the following scenario. Imagine you win the lottery, you win $20 million. Should happen to all of us soon. Me too. You win $20 million lottery, and you decide you're going to give Meister Geld, you're going to build a yeshiva. And then you decide you're even in better mood, you're going to give Chomesh for $20 million, we'll give Chomesh. For Chomesh, $4 million, you donate it, you build a building, you build a yeshiva, you build another campus for Or Sameach, and now you got all this Torah is being learned, b'schus, the $4 million which you've donated, all of that Torah is being learned. There are 500 Bochrim learning Torah every day, b'schus, the money that you've donated to the yeshiva. How would you sleep at night? Sleep pretty well. How would you sleep at night knowing that it's your money built the yeshiva, you sleep pretty well? Every single night you know you've got the schus of 500 Bochrim learning Torah. Now just imagine the same guy, he's on his way to donate the $4 million to the Rosh Yeshiva, to build the yeshiva, and on the way an anti-Semite stops and pulls a gun on him. He says, okay, Jew, I'm going to tell you something. You're going to do an Avera now. And if you don't do the Avera, I'm going to take away your $4 million, you'll never be able to donate it. What does he want the Jew to do? He wants to take one bite of a cheeseburger. That's all he has to do. Take one bite and swallow a piece of cheeseburger, or I take away the $4 million. If you do it, you keep the money, build the yeshiva, get all that schus. You don't do it, I'm taking away all the money. Could even be a word of Lashon Hara. Speak one word of, all you have to do is, Chaim has messy handwriting. That's all you have to say. All you have to say is, Chaim has messy handwriting, it's Lashon Hara. That's why, if you say it, I'll let you keep the money. You don't, I'm taking away $4 million. You never build the yeshiva. Alpi halacha, what should he do? Alpi halacha, what should he do? So, it's obvious, everybody knows, Alpi halacha, you're not allowed to be over the yisur. Alpi halacha, you have an obligation, you must give up the money, you're not allowed to be over any yisurim according to halacha. Is there anybody in this room who at any point in the last week wanted to speak Lashon Hara and didn't? If at one point in the last week you wanted to speak one word Lashon Hara and you did not, imagine what a schus you have. Imagine how you should sleep at night. Because not speaking Lashon Hara one time in the last week is worth more than having given away to $4 million of building a ship and getting 500 guys learning Torah. Because one lo sase is docha everything. And you have to give up all your money and not be over on one lo sase. Imagine a person does a mitzvah. There are many mitzvahs people do. We have no, we're clueless. What are these mitzvahs? Everything that we do, how much is it worth in the eyes of the Borei Olam? The things that we're doing, which we take for granted, how much is it worth? One Lashon Hara, one time that a person had temptation to eat something with a questionable hechsher, questionable means it was treif, and he didn't eat it, one time that happens, and it's better, it's bigger, he would have had to have been mevater on an entire yeshiva with 500 bachurim learning Torah. That's the mitzvah, that's the magnitude of what we're doing, and the magnitude of what we're not doing. There's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. It's an idea we've mentioned in the past, but I think that this idea is so important for anybody who goes into the world of Kiruv and Chinuch. Something has to be thought about over and over. Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, "Hevizor b'mitzvah kala kevachamura." Be careful with an easy mitzvah like a light mitzvah, and less severe mitzvah. Sheina teyodea matan schar nishal mitzvahs. You do not know the reward of the mitzvahs. You do not know how much are the mitzvahs worth. Sheina teyodea matan schar nishal mitzvahs. So, question becomes, why does the Mishnah say Sheina teyodea matan schar nishal mitzvahs? It could have said Sheina teyodea schar nishal mitzvahs. Why does it tell Sheina teyodea matan schar nishal mitzvahs? What is the word matan doing in the mitzvah? In the Mishnah, we would not have been missing anything. It had just said Sheina teyodea schar nishal mitzvahs. So imagine the following scenario. Try to answer this and understand it and see how it applies. Imagine the following scenario. A man knocks on the door of a hardworking middle-class Jew. He says to the Jew, "Listen, my father is deathly ill. He needs emergency surgery. We need $25,000 for emergency surgery to pay the surgeon. Can you help me out?" The Jew is a hardworking middle-class Jew. He's got 9 kids he's paying tuition for. He's barely got his head above water. Says to the guy, "Listen, $25,000 is a lot of money. Come back in a week, I'll see what I can do." Spends a week, he starts with his brother-in-law, goes to his in-laws, his parents, friends, everybody on the block, $15 here, a chai over here, $100 over here. Runs around for an entire week. The guy comes back a week later, says, "Can you help me?" He says, "I've got the money for you. He's got $25,000. Here's $25,000 cash. Your father should have a refuah shleima." The guy bursts into tears. He gives him a hug. He says, "Thank you very much. You've saved my father's life." He takes the money, he can barely get the words out, takes the money, goes out in the street, flags down a taxi, goes off to the airport, gets on a plane, flies out to Las Vegas, and he gambles all the money away. No father, no surgeon, no hospital, the entire story is a fabrication. That's scenario number one. Scenario number two, a man knocks on the door, the wealthiest Jew in the world. Says, "Mr. Gatesberg, my father is deathly ill. Father is deathly ill. Need $25,000. Gatesberg says to him, "Go speak to my secretary's secretary." Goes to the secretary. Secretary walks in and says, "Hi." Before he could say a word, she says, "How much do you need?" He says, "Well, it's a lot." "How much?" $25,000. The check is written out. She takes the check, gives it to him. He walks out with the check, pays the surgeon. Father has surgery, has a refuah. The father's cured. He's a new man. Question, in those two scenarios, who gets a greater schar? The Jew in scenario number one, who ran around He worked up a sweat. He made it. He exerted. And at the end of the week, his efforts had nothing to show for it. We'll call it an onus. He was deceived. And he's got nothing to show for it. Who gets greater schar? That Jew in scenario number one? Or Mr. Gatesburg in scenario number two, who never even picked up the pen to write out the check that paid for the surgery that cured the father who was sick? Who gets a greater schar? Obviously, I'm sure you've all jumped right to the answer. And the answer is that, obviously, and it says in Pirkei Avos, Lefum Tzara Agra. Lefum Tzara Agra. It says the first mission of Pirkei Avos, Lefum Tzara Agra. So why does it say Matan Schar and Shal Mitzvahs? So the answer is that there are two types of schar. There are two types of schar Kodesh Baruch Hu gives. There's a schar that a person gives, that a person receives for the effort, for the energy that's exerted. There's a schar that a person gets for all of the exertions that he puts into a mitzvah. A person who has to drag himself out of bed in the morning and schlep off to shul until he gets his tefillin on and get through davening, versus another guy who loves getting up in the morning at 6:30 when it's frosty in Yerushalayim, and he loves running off to shul, and he just loves davening. So who's going to get greater schar? It's lefum tzara agra, the same thing in learning. The person who has to sweat and toil in his learning, so the person who has to sweat and is difficult and every word is difficult, he gets a higher rate of schar than the person who's a gon, he's an ilui, and it just slides through like he's using an art scroll. Person who has to... Maybe that's how he got to be a gon, I don't know. The person who exerts himself, he gets the greater schar. The schar, that's lefum tzara agra, that's on the one hand. On the other hand, there's another dimension of the schar, and that's matan schar and shal mitzvahs, and that's measured not by the effort and the exertion, it's measured by the accomplishment, what have you done through your mitzvah. That father who was cured by the surgeon in the hospital, that father gets off the operating table and he decides, since HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me a new lease on life, I want to devote the rest of my life to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So he goes and opens up a tzedakah organization and he supports 500 families who don't have food every single Shabbos for the rest of his life. Who shares in the schar of that tzedakah that Mr. Gatesburg never picked up the pen to write out the check? That's matan schar and shal mitzvahs. Matan schar and shal mitzvahs means that there's an aspect of the mitzvah which a person may not even deserve. What from our vision, a person may not even deserve. But the effects, what you've accomplished through your mitzvah, those effects are registered, and those effects you get schar for that. There's an Israeli man in Israel, came to Baal Tshuva. And Baal Tshuva had a family. They asked him, how did you become, what inspired you to become a Baal Tshuva? He said that when he was secular, he was hanging around with his friends and dizzying off in Tel Aviv. I heard there's such a place. He was hanging around with his friends and digging and dizzying off in Tel Aviv, and they were standing outside some club or a bar, whatever it is, and he looks up and he sees there's a young yeshiva bocher is walking through Dizzying Off Square. And the guy, yeshiva bocher, caught this man's attention because he noticed the yeshiva bocher was looking straight down at the ground. He would not pick up his eyes when he was in Dizzying Off. Apparently he had to use Dizzying Off as a shortcut. He had to cut across the entire square, and this man was watching him. The bacher never picked up his eyes. He left his friends. He says, I got to see this. He followed the bacher all the way across Dizengoff. He said later, the bacher never picked his eyes off the ground to look around at all the sights and sounds in Dizengoff. He never picked up his eyes off the ground. The guy said, if there's a koch in the Bria that could get a 17-year-old male to not pick up his eyes in Dizengoff, I have to go find out what the koch is. He left. He went to see, to learn what Torah is all about. As a result, he became frum. What was the inspiration? A yeshiva bacher who never picked his eyes up the ground in Gizagov. After Me'ev Esrim, when that yeshiva bacher comes up, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, all the work you did in your life, all the Torah you taught, that you learned, your chinuch, the kiruv, everything you did. And then he shows him there's a Baal Tshuva with a family in Dorei Doros, which you are now credited for. And the bacher says, where? What did I do? What's God doing me? Remember one time you didn't pick up your eyes and dizzying off? No. Right. That's what you're getting schar for. Because the inspiration of what you've done to somebody else, that's what you're getting schar for. There was a man, just give you another example before the next one. There was a man, man had to have surgery. Went to the doctor. The doctor diagnosed him. The doctor said, you're deathly ill. Told him that the man's got the machla. He told the man that he's got two choices. he could either go through a very painful program of treatments and surgeries that would drag out for 4 years, and eventually he would die with pain and agony. The alternative would be to just let the machla run its course. It would be relatively painless, and within 6 months he would die. The man was from Jew. He said to the doctor, the doctor was secular, he says to the doctor, listen, I have to go speak to my Rav. I want to speak to Reb Moshe Feinstein. He goes to Reb Moshe. He says to Reb Moshe, which of the two should I do? Reb Moshe sat the man down, and he showed him over the next 3-4 years, how many times could he answer Ameni Hashemei Rabba? How many times is he going to put on tefillin? How many dafim is he going to learn in daf yomi? He showed him what he could do in the next 4 years. Reb Moshe said, it's worth staying alive just for what you could accomplish. That's what you have to do. The man went back to the doctor. He said to the doctor, I spoke to Rabbi Feinstein. I want to start the treatments. The doctor says, okay, come back. It'll take 6 weeks. 6 weeks, we'll set up all the chemical, everything needs to be done. Come back in 6 weeks, we'll start the treatment. 6 weeks later, he comes back to the doctor's office. He knocks on the door. He hears a voice inside. The doctor, come in. He opens the door. There's a guy sitting behind the desk. He's got like a black yarmulke, a little scraggly beard. He's got his tzitzis out. The guy opens the door, looks at him, says, oh, sorry, you know, I was looking for Dr. Goldstein. I'm sorry. Starts walking out. Here's a voice that says, hold it, buddy. It's me. Takes a second look. It's Dr. Goldstein. He says, what happened to you? He says, what happened? He says, I want to tell you something. You came in here 6 weeks ago. You're the first patient that I've ever had in all my years when I've given them the option of the pain or the easy way out. You're the first patient I've ever had who's chosen the pain option. I went to speak to that Rabbi Feinstein to find out why you did that, and he explained to me in his very gentle way what life is worth and what you can accomplish. I decided to be a Baal Tshuva because of that. I'm already on my way. I'm starting to become from. I don't know if even Reb Moshe, when he told the man what you could accomplish in the next 4 years, I don't know if Reb Moshe was thinking about this man who he's now going to be Makarev through his actions, and now he's going to share in the schar of whatever this man produces in a Torah life. That's what it means, Matan Schar and Shal Mitzvahs. Matan Schar and Shal Mitzvahs means that whatever you do, whatever influence you have, anybody that you've affected, you are then going to share in the schar of what these people accomplish in their lifetime. Doesn't mean that that should be the ikar motivation, but it's certainly something that people in the field, anybody who's involved in chinuch, anybody involved in kiruv knows. There are certain times where a person becomes discouraged. A person asks himself, is anything happening? Am I accomplishing anything? A person has to know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to pay back dividends at a rate that he cannot imagine. It's unfathomable. Tell you one more example. We don't have a lot of time. Cannot be marich today. Tell you one more example. Very famous story. There was a Rav got into a cab here in Eretz Yisrael. All the fun is in cabs in Eretz Yisrael. Everybody knows that. Everything. You want an education, go to ride cabs, right? That's where you learn everything. All about life is in the cabs. They know also, by the way, they can also predict the future, by the way. They know exactly what the economy needs, everything. Rav gets in a cab, takes a look at the cab driver. He sees the cab driver has got kind of longish hair. Well, he's got longish hair, and he sees an earring peeking out from under the hair. But he notices the cab driver's got a yarmulke, and he looks down, and he sees he's got tzitzis there sticking out from under his shirt. So the Rav looks, the cab driver smiles, and says, I know it looks strange, right? He says, well, no, right? He says, I'll tell you what it is. You see, last week I gave a ride. I was with a Rav. There's another Rav. I was giving him a ride a couple weeks ago. I was giving him a ride. He had hired me for the day, and I took him around the entire day. I was driving around different parts of the country. But when I drove him, I dropped him back off at his home. When I dropped him off at his house, the Rav went into the house, and he said to me, listen, I know that you're worried that you're going to, I wanted you to come in and have something to eat. You haven't eaten all day. And I know that you're concerned if you eat that you're going to lose out on the time that you could have been running the meter. So I want you to do the following. I want you to come in. I want you to be my guest. Come into the house. I want you to have something to eat. And while we eat, I want you to keep the meter running, but you've got to eat. You haven't eaten all day. So the guy says to this dude, he says, that's what I did. I kept the meter running. I went into the house. I sat down. I ate. He didn't rush me. I ate a whole meal, came out. Not only paid me the meter, he gave me a tip on top of it. I said to myself, if that's how Torah Jews behave, then I'm going to become from. I want to be a Torah Jew. I'm on my way. Eventually, the earring's going to go. The hair is going to go. I'm going to make the commitment fully. That's what it means, Matan Schar and Shal Mitzvahs. Matan Schar and Shal Mitzvahs means that if a person has any sort of hashpah on anybody else, And you think to yourself, all I've done, how much have I done? A little bit here, a little bit there. The person has to realize that everything that's going on in their life is now going to be credited to the person who's had the hashpa on them. At least he shares in the schar of the mitzvahs that they do. The Torah says, this week's parsha, as a matter of fact, Torah says, and it's a remarkable, truly remarkable, the Torah says, not this week's parsha, it's back in Shlach. The Torah says that after the Meraglim come back, it says, Va'avdi Kolev, Ekev Hoysa Ruach Acheres Imo Vayamala Acharoi. Kolev given Yifuna, he had a different attitude. I'm going to bring him to the land. I'm going to give him a portion. His offspring is going to inherit that portion of the land. So Kolev has earned a tremendous schar because of his efforts. Ask Moshe Feinstein, what did Kolev do? L'chorek Kolev did not do anything. He came back. He said, listen, we have to listen to Moshe Rabbeinu. The people said, no, we want to go with the Meraglim. Kolev said, no, we have to listen to Moshe Rabbeinu. And in the end, they didn't listen to Kolev. What did Kalev achieve? What practical achievement was there that Kalev should receive such a schar that he's going to get that chelik in Eretz Yisrael? And Reb Moshe writes in the Drash Moshe, he writes that it can't be what Reb Moshe bases that on. I don't know. He does not say. But Reb Moshe says clearly, it can't be that the schar Kalev receives is for his efforts alone. Reb Moshe says there had to be a tangible, some sort of tangible achievement, accomplishment of Kalev ben Yefuna, something concrete that Kalev achieved in order to merit the schar that Kosh Baruch is going to give him. Reb Moshe says, there's a halacha. Everybody knows there's a halacha. Imagine you're walking through a hospital. When you walk through the hospital, you walk past the room and you see there's a patient who's hooked up to a respirator and the doctor's reaching to pull the plug on the machine. And you walk over and you grab the doctor's hand and you stop him from pulling the plug. And you wrestle with the doctor and for 1 minute you manage to stop the doctor from unplugging the plug. Have you accomplished anything concrete in that extra minute of life? Has there been a concrete, tangible accomplishment? The answer is yes. There's something called Chayesha. There's something called Chayesha. You've kept this man alive for another minute. Reb Moshe says, there's something called Chaye Shah of a Nefesh. Chaye Shah of a Nefesh means, and this everybody in the Kiruv world has experienced this. You meet somebody and you could talk to them till you're blue in the face. You discuss everything under the sun. There's Torah Misinai, we don't come from gorillas, there is one God and he can lift stones that he can't create or can create. Everything under the sun. You've been through the whole thing. And you invite him to your house on a Shabbos table and you sit there and you eat chont and you talk and everything else, you explain everything. The next time you see him 10 years later, he's got the same earring with the same long hair, no tzitzis, and has not picked up or done anything religious. Not one iota since the last time he spoke to you. And how do you feel? You feel, but you know what? I could have been sleeping that Friday night. I could have gone to sleep earlier. You know, I gave up my after cholt shot of schnapps and a nap for him, right? And where is he today? Rabbi Isai, it's a mistake. It's a very big mistake. You see, Reb Moshe says that if you meet somebody who's secular, and you talk to them, you influence them, and more important than anything else you could possibly do, either bring them to your house for a Shabbos, or sit down and learn something with them. Best things you can do. Better than talking about gorillas, which he does not care about, whether he came or came from gorillas, that's not what's bothering him. The most important thing you can do is either learn Torah with him, or invite him to your house and show him what a Torah Jew is. It used to be people were looking for, at the time of the Haskalah, people were looking for intellectual challenge. 30 years ago, people were looking for some sort of spirituality. Nowadays, people are looking for sanity. That's all they're looking for. Bring them into a house and show them little children, boys who are dressed like boys, girls who are dressed like girls. By tomorrow morning, he'll be at Minyan, I can almost guarantee you. That's all people are looking for. That's all they need. They come from an insane world, and they're looking for a sane world. That's what people want. If that person sitting at your Shabbos table, for one moment, has a machshava at your Shabbos table, you know what? I really ought to do this. This is for me. I should change my entire life. If for one moment he thinks that, 10 years down the line, there may have been no concrete action that you could identify. If for one moment he thought that, that he saw Rus, is a concrete accomplisher. That's not me saying it. That's what Moshe Feinstein says. And that's called Chayeshav the Nefesh, because the Nefesh came alive for that one moment, that one he saw Rus of Tshuva. That's a concrete accomplishment. A person has to understand that if he's working, he's a mashpia in Klal Yisrael, and Kosh Baruch Hu gave him the schus to be a mashpia. Every hashpa is counted. Every hashpa has an effect. Every hashpa is a concrete, tangible accomplishment. I just end. I'm going to stop. We're running late. We'll end with a story just to show you, in case you think your efforts are ever wasted or lost. There's a story that appears in a very interesting book called The Kiru Files. There's a story that appears in this book that there were two Talmidim from this yeshiva, two Talmidim from Or Sameach. And they went one Shabbos, they went to somebody's house here on across the street by Shmuel on Novi Street. They went over for a visit, they were sitting at the Shabbos tables, and the host started speaking to them. He says to the first guy, you know, excuse me, you know, can I ask you your background? He tells him his background, how he became from. These are two Bachrim already from, had the whole outfit on. He asks the first guy, how did you become from? He tells him the story. He says to the second guy, how did you become from? The second guy says, well, you know, he was in Eretz Yisrael 3 years ago. I was fry as an egg. And I was on my last, what do you call it, I was just running around the country. And then one Friday night, my last Friday night in the country, I went down to the Kaisel. I couldn't leave the country without being at the Kaisel at least once. I went down to the Kaisel. I get a tap on the shoulder. And from a man who is going to share in the schar of thousands of people today, Derech Agav, I got a tap on the shoulder from a certain man. And he asked me if I'd like to experience a Friday night meal, an authentic Friday night meal. I said, hey, yeah, you know, how much is it going to cost? He said, it's free. So I said, okay, where do we go? So he takes me over, says to his host, I went to his house, place, Friday, Lel Shabbos. I sat there at the meal. He says, it was remarkable. He says, the husband and wife seemed to get along. The children were clean. The singing was beautiful. The conversation was stimulating. The food was unforgettable. It was unbelievable, one of the most magnificent experiences I ever had in my life. I was sitting at that Shabbos table, and I thought to myself, I'm going home, I'm packing my bag, and I'm coming to Yeshiva to learn. This is for me. Host looks at him, he says, wow, sounds like a remarkable, amazing experience. You know, okay, it's a remarkable family. You know, where did this take place? Can I ask you? I mean, that's amazing. He says, well, ironically enough, it was right here in this apartment. So the host thinks to himself, well, let's see, who was here before us? It was the Schwartzes, and the Schwartzes left, and then there was the Golds. He says, 1 second, you told me this was 3 years ago. We rented this apartment 4.5 years ago. He says to him, right. It was you and your family. It was your Shabbos table. And I asked them at the yeshiva, I told them I want to be set up to come back to your Shabbos table so I could thank you because I've come full cycle as a result of your efforts. The person has to know something that people at your home for Shabbos, you have Talmidim who don't look like they're making the major commitment that we'd like them to make. You should know that at the end of the day, any hisorus, anything that's accomplished, that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want us to accomplish. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to make the efforts to accomplish. He wants us to make the efforts the way the Torah expects us to make, not, as Rav Hillel alluded to, not making efforts the way there are no gimmicks and there's nothing that we can do that goes against halacha. We're not allowed to do hatzolas nefashos against halacha. We do hatzolas nefashos. We're melamei Torah the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us, the way according to Ruach HaChamim, according to the way we've been instructed by Gedolei Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shemim Mezaka, all of us, that our efforts should bear fruit, that we should all be zochet to be mashpi in Klal Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should be machzir everybody b'tshuva. Amen.
Amen.